Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Taekwondo Life Magazine Live. My name is Mark Sarianis. I'm your host. I'm a third Dan Black Belt, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Taekwondo Life magazine. We are a member of the Believe Sports Network. You can find our program everywhere that podcasts are found. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on our YouTube channel and on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else. Today's program is brought to you by two sponsors, Balance 7 and Bet Online. As for Balance 7, I have had the opportunity, I mentioned to you guys on last week's program, I used my code, Believe, B-L-E-A-V, and I got free shipping, and I got my bottles of Balance 7, and I did start on them this week. This is a pH balancing alkaline supplement drink. The spokesperson is NBA player Lamar Odom, and everyone knows he had some difficulties and some controversies, and he's really gotten back into playing basketball. He's joining the Spanish League, and he accounts for a lot of his ability to sustain himself and regenerate himself as an older athlete due to Balance 7. As an older Taekwondo practitioner, I know there's a lot of wear and tear on the body, and this is hopefully something that'll help me to sustain myself into my later years. So I'll let you guys know. So far, my experience with it has been good, real simple, and I'm really excited about it. So you guys can go over to Balance 7. We'll have a link in the show notes, balance7.com. Put in Believe, B-L-E-A-V, and you get that free shipping. Today on the program, I'm super excited. You know, we try to find a balance of talking about events that are happening in the martial arts. We'll talk about training techniques, movies, martial arts books, and I balance it with interviews. So sometime before the USAT Grand Prix in the Nationals, I had the opportunity to come across a book called Shijak, To Begin, A Modern Martial Arts Story by Master Catherine Yang. And this book is one that interested me because of the subject matter, of course, being Taekwondo, but also that it's a fictional book. And as I've said in the past, we review books. We've had many authors on this program, but most Taekwondo books come in maybe one of three categories. One is practical book, you know, pumse, sparring technique, exercises related to it. The other is biographical, something about the life and history of a master, biography of Bruce Lee, biography of Grandmaster Jun Ri. And third is philosophical book, like Bruce Lee's writings, the Tao of Jeet Kune Do, or things of that nature. This book is very unusual because it's a work of fiction. It is a terrific story, and I'm going to get into it a little bit more. Tell you a little bit more before we get into the interview. I had the opportunity to speak to Master Catherine Yang about the book, but it's a work of fiction. It involves the journey of a young Taekwondo instructor and competitor towards the Olympics as she competes in the world of sparring and she gets ready. And it's about the balance to some degree of her relationship with her grandmaster, her master, her coach, and finding out what she wants to do and who she wants to be in life. The book is written from a place clearly of someone who understands Taekwondo, who understands the journey, and it is written with such unbelievable authenticity that it is really, really a great read. Before we get into talking a little bit more about that, I wanted to, of course, bring you a word from our other sponsor, BetOnline. Football season is roaring at this point. We are going into week two. Baseball season is winding down. There's a million things, fights, million things that are going on. And of course, as you know, BetOnline is your number one spot for all of your college and pro action this season. You get all your latest updated odds, props, contests. They always have different kinds of contests. And as always, when you sign up, use your mobile device, you'll receive your welcome bonus. Up to today, now they're running up to 100% welcome bonus. So that's even a bump up and an increase from the prior. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline is your online sportsbook expert. This program is brought to you by BetOnline, and we will have a link in the show notes. Getting back to, I'm going to try to show this. Hopefully it'll show in the camera. Maybe not great, but there it is, Shajak. It is available on Amazon. It's available at Master Yang's website, which I believe is Yang's Taekwondo or New York City Taekwondo. We'll link that. It's available in Kindle format or in paperback, but it is really, really enjoyable. It is well written. It is, you might think that something of that nature may not have, it's got a great balance of the technical aspects being accurate, the training, understanding the training, but also the dynamics of the relationships and the hierarchy and the challenges of the grandmaster immigrants who came here and have first generation sons or daughters that are taking over their dojangs. The story, as I said to her in my interview, is one that Taekwondo practitioners, in my opinion, would love, would enjoy. But it's such a well-written story that people outside of the Taekwondo world certainly can relate to and enjoy. And really, really, I think we'll get some great enjoyment out of it. As for Master Yang, I was remiss. I enjoyed speaking to her so much in the upcoming interview that you'll see that I talked very little about her book, which, by the way, of a review, I'm going to write a review. I would give it the highest review and the highest recommendation. It's a great read, and I intend to pick it up and read again. But she is a woman who had great passion for the martial arts from a young age. She took a slightly different path. She went on to Stanford, went on to Harvard Law School, became an associate at a major law firm, and essentially simultaneously had been in Shotokan and got involved in ITF Taekwondo and was on the WT competitive team and gave it all up to essentially run her own dojang here in New York City proper in Manhattan. We talked a little bit about her book. We talked a little bit about her training. We talked a little bit about the challenges of being in an urban dojang while a pandemic abounds and people were leaving New York City. But she was inviting and she was warm, and I look forward to meeting her and training with her and sitting down with her again and bringing you more information. And I look forward to a sequel or future books from her, because she's such a great writer and she has a natural talent for telling a story. So I encourage you to check out this book, Shajak, a Modern Taekwondo Story, a work of fiction, but there is a lot in there, a modern martial arts story, I apologize. And there's a lot in there for anyone in the martial arts, as well as anybody else. I encourage you to check out Master Yang's website, and I look forward to hearing your feedback. And please don't forget, this episode is brought to you by BetOnline and Balance 7. I look forward to seeing you on the mat. How are you, ma'am?
Oh, sorry, I'm going to close the door. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you? Thank you so much for taking time to talk
to me. Pretty good. Hold on one sec. Let me get to
take your time.
We have two floors in the dojang, so a class is going on the upper floor. Oh, you're in uniform.
Yes, I'm doing the same thing. I'm in the basement of our our instructor's lounge, and they're teaching classes upstairs.
Where's your school?
In Levittown, New York, on Long Island, Nassau County.
Oh, okay. Great. How's it going with back to school and everything?
It's going well. I mean, we managed to hang in there through the entire pandemic. They did a great job here of trying to go virtual and trying to figure it out. And we're back now. We still have virtual classes, but we're back live. And thank God it's been good. What about with you guys? I know the city was a ghost town for the longest time.
Right. And a lot of people moved, actually. I'm shocked at how many people moved. First one wave last year, and then a second wave at the end of the school year. So even more of a ghost town. But we hung in there. Zoom was less popular here.
Sure.
I was doing like 7 to 8 private lessons a day. Still doing pre-pandemic, I probably taught 10 classes a week. During the pandemic, I probably taught 40 classes a week.
Oh, wow.
And then, so exhausted. And most of them outdoors on my bike from like one kid's apartment to another kid's apartment to a park to like a plaza. We did classes on the sidewalk. It was pretty insane.
The one thing I've seen is that those students that really hung in there through the pandemic are really the ones that you expect will have a great longevity in practicing. So
I hope so. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's
great.
We were
in the park through the snow, through the rain. So I figure if kids are willing to do taekwondo in the snow, they're probably going to stick with it. Same with the adults.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Do you have a broad spectrum of students that you're teaching? Are you going from kids through adults and sort of everywhere in between?
Right.
Oh, that's great.
We're like 50-50 kids and adults.
That's great. A totally different set of teaching and skills that are needed. So I started in a time which you're probably familiar with, but when I started, it was basically no kids. It was pretty much only adults only. Yeah. When I started, it was largely males and it was largely adults. I mean, some teens maybe, but it really didn't get to be until probably the middle 80s, I think, that we started to see, that whole, and then certainly, I guess, after the Karate Kid, that whole demographic changed dramatically to where, sort of closer to where it is now.
So what style of taekwondo did you start with?
I started with a Chungdaekwon. I've always been on Kukkiwon. Go right ahead.
These are people who are late for class.
Yeah, it's fine. Right, they get buzzed in. It's different from here. So I started I started for a very short time with Chungdaekwon under a gentleman by the name of Robert Jenkins Clark, who was a senior student of Duksung. And then I immediately transitioned into Jidokwon, and I've been with Grandmaster Weich Park, 88 Olympic coach, and his family. He's here, but his sons are running the dojang for the last 30 years. So that's really been...
Doesn't he have several dojangs?
Yes. This has been the main. East Meadow was where we were formerly housed, and this is now the main place that we are, which is great. It's a family atmosphere, and now we're into the multi-generational. So you're seeing the kids and the grandkids of former students, even if the parents and grandparents aren't still training, they're coming here, and they're bringing. So it's become a real family affair, which is really nice. It's a different transition for me. So
that's awesome. And you've been with him at his school for that long?
Yes. I had a short break in between, and I'm not here as a full time. I'm here every day now, but just doing different things in my life. But I've been together with him since that entire time. So
that's impressive.
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful, and they've been great to me. So it's been it's a fair, like I said, it's a family affair, and I love it. So,
and you guys have that tournament, right?
The New York Open. Yes,
right. Yeah. That's happening this year, right?
It is happening this year. This is a return to live event. We did it virtually last year, which I know a lot of people did, which was fun, but it was just different. It was a way, on the Pumse side, we had a great opportunity for people to continue to train.
but it's not the same thing. And I returned, I referee. So I did for USAT, I went to the Grand Prix in South Carolina. And then that's I was distracted because I did a refereed at the Nationals in San Antonio. So it's great to be back to live competition.
That's great. So if I have any questions about the rules that are just constantly changing.
Yes. I'm trying. I try very hard to stay on top of it, which is hard. I speak to Master Edward Hitchery. He has the same issue, which is, you know, you're trying to teach stuff related to it, but then when the rules change so quickly and it's not disseminated, it's hard to make sure you're doing that. So
and I feel like every tournament like either chooses to follow the new rules or not follow the new rules, right?
It's very hard. Yeah. You got to know whether or not you're, you know, and again, it's one of the things people don't always think to ask, but whether or not they're using the updated USAT rules, right? Because you have on both ends, it can be very confusing. So, and you know, people send out tournament packets, but I don't know that everybody reads it. All the coaches, all the competitors, you know, it's a lot of stuff and it's a lot to read.
Well, now I know if you don't show up for that, like 7:30, 8 a.m. meeting, you don't get the latest update.
That's true.
No matter what they send in the packet, they change it at 8 a.m.
That's true. Absolutely true. You got to be there. You got to have your cup of coffee in hand and be there very early to get it. You know, I think throughout Nationals, we had our meetings at 7 a.m. So I was up early, 6 o'clock breakfast by 7 a.m. The tournament started afterwards. But you know that in that 1 hour slot, you're going to get the information you need. So
the updates.
So tell me, I know your style, it's a little bit interesting because, you know, particularly in reading the book, which I loved. I really did love the book and
awesome.
It was really written for, I could tell from the place of knowledge of, you know, of truly of somebody who's been down that road. But it is written largely from, I know ITF has an agreement with the IOC, and I know that there are ITF competitors who take the Olympic path, but it really is written from a Kukkiwon World Taekwondo sort of a centered type approach from my perspective. Tell me about your path, because from what I see from looking at your lineage, it comes much more through the ITF style.
Right. So actually, I started in traditional karate, which is why ITF felt like a really easy transition.
That's this Chung De Kwan for me was the same, right? It was very, very tied to the Shotokan.
Right. So like very straightforward, very linear. And then, but ITF does like it. Introduce some of the more circular motions. So my second experience with martial arts was ITF Taekwondo. But in law school, I was with J.H. Kim in Boston.
Oh, sure.
And so his style is traditional ITF in class, but his competition team is all WTF. So he teaches he's amazing. He teaches all of the classes.
Like, oh, wow.
He teaches all the classes. And they're all traditional ITF, but then he's hired a set of Korean coaches who teach the competition classes completely separate from ITF. So he didn't go to a single, he doesn't teach any competition ITF. All the competition related Taekwondo is WTF, which is where I got my introduction to that. So, and all his coaches are, you know, fresh from the Kukkiwon, like a third degree, fourth degree. And this is their first job out of college. They're from Yongin University, I think.
Oh, sure.
So, and he cycles them through his dojang to teach his competition teams.
Well, they are probably, you know, they're among the top in the world. So that makes a lot of sense. So right. tell me, so when I read the book, because of the fact that the book is written, you know, for somebody who's been around it as long as I have, right? So it's always that situation where, sometimes when you're too close to something, you become hypercritical of it, right? So you're a lawyer and you have a very difficult time watching legal drama on TV, right? Because you're going, that would never happen, right? So doctors, the same thing, teachers. But in reading the book, for somebody who's been around it as closely as I have, the book has great authenticity. And the book it's so on point. It's really, really on point to both the training, the emotional experience, the tournament experience. You know, over the years, people have sort of modified, even talking to Philip and Simon Rhee, right? So they did best of the best, but they made certain changes to it because the world wasn't as familiar with Olympic Taekwondo and they refer to it as karate and they made some changes in the way that they did it for cinematic effect, but that's not really true in your book. How much of that book is from your your life and having walked that path and how much of it is from, you know, just being around it and sort of melting it all together into sort of a historical fiction kind of a thing?
So in terms of personal experience, I think less so. So, okay. I mean, most of it's made up and fictional. But in terms of it being authentic and things that I have seen or have heard in the martial arts world, I didn't really target an audience. I wrote it basically for myself. I wrote it, you know, during the pandemic when I was just stuck in my apartment. So it wasn't, and I don't really care if it's widely disseminated or widely understood by anybody who is not. So I already told people it's a very technical book. I made all my friends buy it, but then I gave them a caveat. Like, you have to be a Taekwondo nerd to really enjoy it. Cause I didn't,
I do agree. I think that that does hyper elevate your appreciation of it. But there's a very key emotional and relationship aspects of the book. The book is very heartfelt. And I think that people that are in a world of sports or in a world of relationships can really relate to a lot of things, right? Because we're dealing with grandmasters and people may not fully understand the nature of our hierarchy, right? And the nature of our culture in the sense that they may be off-put even to some degree by the nature of a grandmaster to their master, even if that's their son or their students. And we understand that better, but there still is very human relationships in the book, which I think that anyone can really relate to if they were to pick that up. I really felt that it was, which is sort of another one of my questions, is that you're legally trained, right? So you obviously have high intellect, you've been around, but the level of writing is different, right? Legal writing is different. I know people write briefs, they're supposed to move, but it's more technical writing. The book is written in a very fluid way. It has a great story. It has a great feel. There's a lot of, you're on the edge of your seat to some degree as it relates to the sports aspects of it. Tell me a little bit about that. Is that something that's natural? Is that something you've worked on? Is that something that you train separately for? Where does that come from?
No, it's my first time writing a novel.
Really? And,
so what I would do is I would go for really long bike rides in Brooklyn, which is where I live, like on empty streets. And like, I'd ride my bike for 2 hours and sort of imagine the next scene or the next chapter. And then I would just imagine it all in my head, go back, write it down. I've actually never taken a creative writing class or even, you know, I think all lawyers want to write a novel, but we just talk. It's like hot air. But I've never actually trained or even imagined I would complete a novel.
That's interesting. I will tell you that is not evident. It's really not evident. And I'm, you know, I read a lot of stuff. And, you know, martial arts books come in a number of varieties, right? Your book is the outlier, right? Because martial arts books come in biography or autobiography usually, right? The story of, or they come in a training book, right? The technique book of this is the Pumse book, or this is a book about weight training, or they come in a philosophy book, right? So they'll come in, Be Like Water, or they'll come in the writings Bruce Lee. For there to be a book that integrates Taekwondo so heavily into a fictionalized story that's based in fact, it's really unusual. I can't really think of too many other books that are even of a similar genre that I can think of.
I've always thought of Taekwondo as a very personal thing. Like, as a teacher, I think the most important part of my teaching is not actually teaching them how to kick and punch. I feel like they can get that from a lot of teachers, but it's that I show that I care for them as a person, and I care for their, you know, well-being, for their development. I always try to ask personal questions of my kids, like how it is, how they're doing at school, you know, if they're having problems. I feel like you can't teach without having a personal relationship. I feel like you can otherwise learn everything on YouTube or, you know, through a series of, or you can go to any dojang if you're athletic and learn. But I feel like in order to really get the essence of Taekwondo or any martial art, you have to have that relationship with the teacher. And some of the best teachers I've known are, you know, elementary school teachers or like piano teachers. And I've gotten a lot of advice from them throughout the years. One of my best I think, pieces of advice that I received from a kindergarten teacher is she told me she spent every September of every year not teaching anything to her kids, but she needs to know all her kids. And then she tries to get them to like her, which it blows my mind. I'm like, why do they need to like you? They just need to learn ABC, right? But she's like, it's so important. Once they like you, once you have that connection, then you can teach them anything.
I do agree.
Forever, you know? But like, without that relationship, like the teaching student thing is just a transaction. So it might just be my approach to teaching. I try to like all my students, you know, although it's hard to like everybody who comes in through the door.
Sure.
Because you don't have a social process.
That's true of anything in life.
Find something. You're right. Or else you can't give them enough, you know? So at the end of the day, I feel like every teaching relationship should be caring and thoughtful on a very individual basis. Otherwise, they can just watch a video of somebody who's better at Taekwondo than me and learn that way.
Well, that's a very interesting approach. Do you think that approach is one that is that an approach that you're modeling from your experience? Now, you talked about people outside of the martial arts, like piano teacher, music teacher. Is that mirror your experience, or is it the opposite of your experience in Taekwondo as trained in terms of your training experience?
No, I mean, I'm like one of those martial arts geeks. I've wanted to do this like since I was six.
Okay.
So I've had an idealized version of what I think martial arts instruction should be, like who I think the perfect teacher should be, like since I was like very little. You know, I've watched all the movies, I've read all the books, and like I have this idealized version of what this should be. And if I didn't have to do this for money, I would scale it down even more. You know, I'd have a dojang that I would only let in people, you know, who really need Taekwondo. Like I would do it a whole different way. I think the commercialized aspect of it really distorts what true martial arts should be like. And it's, you know, not good or bad. It's just the way it is. It has to be this way.
It's a reality. It's a reality.
But because I've been, you know, I'm 46, I've thought about this for 40 years. There's a way that I would like to do it that I can't do it. But if I ever retire and could do it that way, I would. And I think that's more reflected in my book because that's what I think about. That's what keeps me okay with the commercial aspect. Like I still have this kernel of idealism of how martial arts should be. And I think it should be an intimate relationship between teacher and student. You are passing on a piece of you to, you know, hopefully somebody who's receptive to what you have to say. And it's not just kicking and punching. It's like a part of your personality, is a part of like, you know, teaching them about other things that are more important than Taekwondo, like kindness, like compassion. You can teach all of that through Taekwondo. You can teach your whole being through Taekwondo, which is what I would like to do, which is, I guess that's what maybe came through the book. Because
it certainly did. And it's great. And I agree with you. And, you know, in terms of education and knowledge, we're always learning, but like for me to be in one place with one group for this, as long as I have, that only can happen as a result of the fact that it's more than just right. Because it's not even about what we can learn, but it's about my ability, right? At a certain point, my ability to learn about kicking and punching, obviously is going to diminish, right? So what do I get out of it, right? But I'm here, and that relationship changes now in terms of giving back. Do you, in terms of how you run your classes, because, you know, I've seen obviously the change, but one of the things about us as martial artists and martial arts instructors is that there's still a significant amount of discipline, right? There's still a significant amount of regimen in terms of how we run the classes. For me, probably the hardest personal balance as an instructor for me was to try to find that balance, because I was always so strict, right? So I didn't want to be in a situation where you're so authoritative that you're not able to have that personal relationship, right? Because I agree with you, the personal relationship is what brings it to the next level. But in terms of how you run your classes, they still run in a very traditional way, and in terms of hierarchy, and in terms of the discipline and the bowing and the respect and that type of stuff?
So some people from the outside, so some ITF people think that I'm quite lax.
Okay.
Because there's less yes ma'aming, yes siring. But I feel like, in fact, I'm actually more strict. I'm much more strict with the bowing. I'm much more strict with bullying. I feel like very, very traditional hierarchical Taekwondo can lend itself to bullying. So I'm much more strict in keeping everybody in line in terms of being a good person. And with kids and adults, so I do have my idealized version of what martial arts should be like. And there should not be talking in class. There should not be like 5,000 water breaks.
Right,
so,
right.
But I try to do it in a funny way so they don't feel oppressed. With the kids, like I charge them for things. I charge them for water. So yes, in this day and age, apparently we have to give water breaks, but like I can charge you 50 pushups of water just to prove to me that you're thirsty. If you're really thirsty, then you can do your 50 pushups.
I love it. I love it.
So things like that. So like people are like, oh, you're soft because, oh my God, water breaks. Like why are there water breaks? So there is still bowing on and off the mat. Less yes siring, yes ma'aming. That's a personal thing. Because my philosophy with that is I feel like I can tell if you respect me or not.
Sure.
But if you say yes ma'am and roll your eyes, it does nothing for me.
And that's right? True. That's absolutely true. That's form over right. Substance. Absolutely. Sure.
Right. So sure. I'd rather correct you in a way that you can learn how to bow with sincerity instead of just yes ma'aming me to death, you know?
That's great. No, I love it. So tell me, in terms of your personal history, you're teaching exclusively. Has your history been to in the sparring and competition circuit, or was that just an offshoot or a forms competitor, or were you somebody who was, you know, I was somebody who never really, even though I'm refereeing now, I never was really a competitive. I never really got involved in competition. I went to a school where we had the Olympic coach, where people were being trained for Olympic competition, but it was just never my thing. My thing was to develop myself with certain things inside the dojo. What was your path that sort of led you into this, where you are now?
Right. Well, so I wanted to compete when I was, I came to martial arts and Taekwondo too late. So I did Shotokan in college. And then in law school, I found ITF, but then through J.H. Kim School, WTF Taekwondo, because they're their competition team.
Right.
So so by the time I started competing, I was already behind the eight ball. But like in my early 20s, I entered as many tournaments as I could. And my instructors allowed me to enter as a black belt just because, you know, I was young, reckless, fast, you know.
Sure.
And they're like, all right, you know, do whatever. So, I mean, they were nice about it. And I got my butt kicked by all these teenagers who were aspiring to, you know, the national team. But I kept at it through. So I graduated law school and I came to New York City and joined another ITF school, which didn't have any WTF offshoot. Okay. So my only WTF exposure was from J.H. Kim. So I trained myself. So I would take 3 hours out of the day. I'd run, I'd cut weight, and then I'd make my friends take me to, you know, be my coach at these WTF tournaments. And my instructor in New York City was Suk Jun Kim. So he knew about it. I don't think he liked it. Right. And I think the other students at the school didn't like it because I did put on a black belt to compete, even though, you know, technically I wasn't, although I got my black belt in Shotokan. It was like,
sure.
I was a mix and mash of everything, but I had my WTF dreams alive until, I mean, eventually being a lawyer and doing this like 3 hours every morning, like wore me down a little bit. Plus I didn't win because I think I just started too late.
Sure.
I won a few matches at nationals as a red belt. But
that's impressive.
As a black belt, I got my butt kicked. So yeah. A lot of that, the double kick thing, the Charlie horses on the left, sure. It's just, you know what? If you don't do that double kick from the time you're six, it's just very hard to combat with ITF skills. We say straight techniques can beat round techniques, but not when those round techniques are so fast and they come so often, you know, there's only so much you can do like in the line of fire. So eventually I just like lost so many times and like just got banged up. But like at that age, you get banged up and you're fine. I mean, I showed up to work with a black eye. So I got a black eye at nationals. I lost in the semifinals at Nationals -1-0 because she got a penalty for punching me in the face.
Oh, wow.
Right. But I couldn't stop bleeding.
Oh, wow. That's,
so you get a 1 minute like medical timeout, right? I couldn't stop bleeding. So I was still bleeding all over myself and they disqualified me. But I didn't have a coach. I was my own coach. My sister was in the stands. So like I tried to go by myself, but like, you know.
That's impressive though. That's impressive. So how is it now with the students that you teach? Are they on a, is the nature of what you're teaching, does it have a competitive path? Does your school participate? No. Obviously now the world is different, but are you competing in tournaments or is it very much related to, is it sort of closed in terms of what occurs?
No. So one of the things I really dislike about the Taekwondo world, so I also play judo. The judo world is wide open. Anybody can walk into a judo dojo, put on a gi and play everybody on the mat. I feel like Taekwondo should be the same way.
Like, it should be open.
The instructor should be able to keep everybody safe. Yeah, obviously don't allow a jerk onto the mat, but like anybody can join my class. And so I have, so my students feel that way, think that way. Unfortunately, they're also like, the adult students are older, so they want to compete. So I take them to some tournaments, but I have to really like, we have to really strategize because they're just not good enough, fast enough, you know, to get there. So
it's a different game. I mean, the Olympic style game it's a game, right? So it doesn't make you a better or worse martial artist to not be able to compete in that game. You have to train for that and you have to understand what is required to be able to score the points. And it's not necessarily what everybody, you know, if your training is not, it's not necessarily a reflection of your not being a good black belt or whatever the case is. If you're not, you just have to understand, like anything else, you have to understand the timing of the game and the rules of the game.
Right. So I have quite a few adults who do want to compete, but for the older, by older, I mean like in their 20s and early 30s, females, there's just nobody in their divisions.
Sure.
You go to these tournaments and there are no black belt women. And then for the guys, I take them to tournaments, but like, I make sure they're in that like 32 and above the veterans or
the ultra. So you have the non light head contact kicking and things of that nature.
Right.
That's great.
So, yeah. It's just, it'd be cool to have somebody who is young and talented. I wanted to dedicate the time. I've tried competition teams with younger kids. And that worked for about a year or two. It's a lot of work for like just a handful of people. It's harder in Manhattan. I don't attract kids who want to mix it up, you know? I attract kids who want to do it once a week and get their black belt.
That's interesting.
I'm in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, no, but I think that's true. I think that there's a lot of geographic differences to, you know, where you are. Like I'll go to travel to upstate New York and, you know, you have some of these places where real estate doesn't doesn't cost what it costs in Manhattan. And you'll see a dojang where it's 10,000 square feet and, you know, and you're like, you know, that's a luxury that most of us in more urban settings don't have. And the demographic is a little bit different and the competition is different, right? You're in Manhattan. You probably have a lot of different martial arts that people can choose from. You might be in an area in certain parts of the country where, you know, the dojang is the only form of martial arts, you know, that people are, right. So.
Yeah. And the other strange thing is that I have a lot of parents who don't like head contact.
Oh, okay. Interesting. That's interesting.
So, like,
no, that is part of the quote unquote business aspects of it in the sense that you're dealing with trying to deal with that. It's also part of the change again from dealing with children, right? Because when you're dealing with adults and things, then the program is the program. And if they like it, great. If they don't like it, that's fine. But if you're trying to tell it to kids, then there's always the aspect of the fact that the parents have an understanding of it and a say. And so I understand that completely.
So, but I also feel like it's impossible to, you know, cultivate a great competitor unless you have them like at 7 or 8 and then you build them up. But like at 7 or 8, if you're not allowing any head contact, then they're never going to get there, you know?
No, that's true. That's what you say is absolutely true because you know that the competition has them being farm raised from 7 and 8 head contact, doing drills, doing, you know, really, really hyper intensive skill set. So you're right. They're at a significant disadvantage as it relates to the competitive aspects of it. So what is your situation in terms of, again, I'm pretty familiar with New York City. I know that the demographic has changed in terms of from the standpoint of your classes. I know they're probably now smaller, more spread out because of the things you're talking about, but are you able to get back to doing the things that you basically were doing before, or are the protocols and the various procedures and things limiting what you're able to do at this point?
So we're sparring again with the people who want to. It's optional. So it's always been optional, because I do have a crowd who just wants to work out.
Sure.
So the strange thing is I'm not requiring uniforms because we have a whole waiting area that I'm not opening up, just because people are going to eat inside and just hang out.
Sure.
In 600 square feet of space, which is not good.
No, I understand completely.
So the classes are a little weird. A lot of people are in t-shirts and shorts, but the training is back to the same.
Oh, that's good.
Right. I do try to split it out. So I do have a luxury of a little bit more space than most dojons. But still, I mean, it's nothing compared to the suburbs, but we are able to split people up a little bit. And I offer more adult classes than before in order to, I used to have 20 people in a class in an 1800 square foot space,
sure.
20, 25 people. Now I try to limit that to 12 to 15. And even that makes people nervous. We're still masked up indoors.
Okay.
But I just tell them, hey, you guys are in outstanding shape.
No, that's great. It's important. And, right? And that's one of the things that we've seen is absolutely important. And here, again, it's been tough. It was a transition, starting out, we came back after all the time of being away and then having the kids in 6 foot apart, little boxes where we didn't do any type of contact drills. Everybody was, masked up, and it was, still trying to offer something, offer the physical fitness, right. Offer the mental stress release, but not be able to. And slowly we've migrated, much, much closer to normal. I mean, I don't know what normal is anymore, but, we're much right. closer. We have right. the tournament coming up, and there's tons of protocols and COVID protocols. I think that the facility we're doing it in is you have to be fully vaccinated if you're over 13. Otherwise, you can't be in the facility, which is not our rule. It's the facility rule for the other kids that have to be tested. So it's tough. It's tough. But we're doing what we can, which is all you can do.
You can't
change your circumstances. You got to adapt to it. So, and that's part exactly. of the training. That's part of the Taekwondo lesson. So
exactly. The one good thing is that we have a Saturday. I'm keeping all my Saturday classes outdoors.
Oh, that's great.
It's like I have a 10,000 square foot dojang because
that's great.
The field is huge and we're the only ones there.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And hopefully you'll be able to do that at least for the next 60 days or so without any kind of weather.
No. We did it through rain, through snow.
Oh, that's great.
So
outdoor training is wonderful. I love it. I love it.
I had no idea how great it could be. Right.
That's great. That's wonderful. So what about a book? Are there future books? Are there books percolating around in your head or not at this point or
yeah, I'm actually thinking about the next version, so she makes it to Tokyo 2020.
Oh, that's great. So,
yeah. I would like to continue the story through, and I have, it happens while I ride my bike. So I live 10 miles away from my dojang now. So 10 miles here, 10 miles in, that's 2 hours.
I'm not surprised when I listen to a lot of famous songwriters. It's very meditative. Many of them say that their songs come to them while they're driving. Willie Nelson wrote numbers of his songs getting on the highway with his truck
and
drive. So yes, yeah. But it's very meditative. So if the bike works. Now, what is your? I know that you said you wrote it for yourself, which is probably cathartic, and your concerns are not. Whether or not it sells or doesn't sell, but I'm sure you've gotten feedback. And I'm sure the feedback based on what I've read has all been good, which doesn't shock me at all. Is that gotta be gratifying, right? Regardless of the reason for doing it, but to be able to hear people are connecting with it, has gotta be a gratifying thing, I would think.
It is actually really cool. It was frightening putting it out. So I was, my sister forced me to put it out. It had been done 6 months before that. and I hadn't touched because I didn't plan on, I was busy with the dojang and everything. And then my sister pushed me. She was like, get it done, you know, put it out. It's not that hard on Amazon. It's actually pretty easy. And the strange thing is that now I feel hesitant about writing again because there was positive feedback for the first one. I'm like, what if everybody hates the second one?
You know what? I think you have to go into it with the same mentality, which is that you write it for yourself, you write it without those thoughts, and it'll be what it is. And it really is, like I said, it's, you know, I guess hearing you say that doesn't surprise me about the process, because it is a very personal, it's extremely personal book. And it doesn't, I mean, if I was going to write a commercial book, I certainly wouldn't write a, you know, fictionalized sports sort of semi-biographical taekwondo story. If I was looking to write something that I thought would have broad-based appeal. So certainly it makes sense that it was very personal to you.
Right. You're right. Maybe that'll get me writing again, but it was frightening putting it out there. I'm just like, what if zero people agree with me and like zero people understand where I'm coming from? And like, I lose students because they now think I'm an idiot, or, you know, I lose parents because they're like, what are you teaching my child?
Well, you know? I mean, certainly as somebody who's read it, and I am critical, you know, I'd say to you that first of all, you know, it really is a great book. It's a great read. So I would recommend it to anyone who likes to read, because it's a great read. Anyone who likes sports books or, you know, but it's a book with a great message. From the standpoint of martial artists, which, you know, we're going to go out to our community, which is a worldwide community of martial arts practitioners, which is largely WT Kukiwon based, but we cross over, we speak to people from all sorts of martial arts and all sorts of Taekwondo and karate and mixed martial arts even. It's a great book. I really do recommend it highly. I really enjoyed it. I really couldn't put it down. And I would look forward to any kind of a sequel. And like I said, it's a unique, I think people in what we do crave, they crave, you know, we've seen that when you watch martial arts movies, right? So many of them have, but our sort of area of the world is sort of not heavily. So you look at a movie like Best of the Best again, it's so beloved by the Taekwondo community because it is, again, I use the term outlier. There aren't that many movies that are like that. And that movie was, again, a work of passion from Philip Ree, right? He wrote it. He wanted to write a positive martial arts movie that wasn't simply based upon, you know, it being, you know, two warring factions or two warring dojangs. And he wanted to have it, you know, be something positive, a positive message. And it really resonated with people. I think your book resonates. I was excited to speak to you. Speaking to you is very affirming and validating to the person that speaking to you. I'm not shocked that you're the person who wrote the book that I read. If that makes sense, because it's well written, it's thoughtful, and it really is. It's got a lot of head and it's got a lot of heart, and that really was very meaningful to me. And as loving this martial art as much as I do, I'm more of a martial artist than an athlete. I'm very protective of the art, and I'm very passionate about people who share the passion that I have for it. So I feel like you gave me a gift.
Oh, thank you. And then everybody who has come out of the woodwork, who has sort of affirmed it and said, oh, you know what? I feel the same way. Or like, that's why I practice Taekwondo or the martial arts, kind of like reinforces my decision to keep on doing this, despite like all the craziness around us. It makes, you know, having a dojang and teaching so worthwhile.
That's wonderful. And I really think in the time that we live in and the difficult times and how crazy things are, key good role models in the martial arts is what the world needs right now. I think it's more important than ever. It's more important for our children. It's more important for our society. So I applaud you. I'm so glad that you're still doing. There was an article in American Banker this week about the number of martial arts schools across the country that closed during COVID, which is a huge number. And that's a bad thing. Martial arts practice in our country is a good thing. It's good for making all of us better, regardless of what the martial, you know, if it's a traditional martial art, if it's teaching the right values, To me, I support it. I applaud it. And I think it makes us a better society. I really believe that. I believe it's improved my life. It's improved the life of my children and anybody I know who's been involved, even for a short time, their life is better.
Right. I absolutely agree. So, I always feel like, you know, when a student comes here, it should be like the best hour of their day, especially
that's
with
great.
You know,
and I'm sure that it is. And that's great. And I can tell from your essence. So I want to thank you for talking to me. Because for me,
for me,
it's an independent and I want people to, probably maybe not as much as you, but for my own selfish reasons, I want people to read your book because I love it. I love to share books. I love to share books about the art. So, and I think that your book is meaningful and I think people will get something out of it. So it's really an honor to speak to you. And I'm glad that you have an open policy. I drive around with my Doba in the car and my black belt. So I would be happy and honored to share the space with you and learn
Absolutely.
From you. You
know, by any time, our schedules online, just drop in, surprise me.
Wonderful.
I'm always here.
That's really wonderful. I thank you so much. If there's anything that you ever need. And if you, of course, if you're ever out by our way, we welcome you. Our door is also always open. There are so many nights that I teach the adult and teen class, and we have visitors and guests that come in and train with us. And our students really welcome people that everyone's always welcomed in. So,
okay, great. Thank you so much.
I thank you. I'm going to stand up and bow. I'm in here.
Right.
So thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Yang. I really appreciate it. And I'll get in touch with you as we go. So like I said, over the next couple of days, you have my email. Send me any information you want me to include. And then I'll let you know as we get closer.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.